Today on Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, how do you move forward after losing a child?
You literally can shift a relationship overnight with a new mindset. What would happen in turn is it would open up the emotional tank inside of him to pour out his feelings and emotions for our daughter, Grace, which made me feel even that much more connected to him because he felt this freedom and security in my love to be able to express his grief with me.
Welcome to Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Five Love Languages. A family near you is facing the tragic loss of a child. Whether through miscarriage, stillbirth, a disease, or an accident, it's one of the deepest valleys a marriage can ever encounter.
Today, Candy McVicker shares her story and the things she learned through this deep loss. And if you go to our website, our featured resource today is the book, Holding On to Love After You've Lost a Baby, The Five Love Languages for Grieving Parents. And Gary, I know you choose book projects carefully, especially ones you write with somebody else. Tell us why you think this topic is important.
Well, you know, Chris, through the years as a pastor, I've had so many people in my office who have lost a child. Sometimes stillbirth, sometimes miscarriage, sometimes a young child, you know, 2, 3, 4 years old accidentally or with a disease. And as a matter of fact, when I received our first copy of this book, I read it again. Of course, you know, we wrote it and had to read the manuscript several times, but I read it again and I sat there and thought, man, if I had had this book through the years as a pastor, I would have given it to every single person in my office because it's so real. And I chose to write it with Candy because, I've never experienced the loss of a child. My wife and I, we have 2 children. But I wanted to write this book with someone who had. And Candy, of course, has lost 2 children and has 2 children who are living now, 2 in heaven and 2 on earth. And God has used her to help so many other couples who are going through this experience. And that's why I wanted to write it with her. And I've just been so, so pleased with the way the book has turned out. And she shares her story and her walk and how God has used all of this in her life. So, yeah, I'm excited about the book and also excited about our interview today with Candy.
Yeah, same here. Well, let me introduce her, Candy McVicker. She's an inspirational speaker and devoted advocate for families who are grieving a baby or child. After experiencing the stillbirth of her daughter, Grace, she and her husband, Stephen, founded the Missing Grace Foundation, whose mission is to provide support, resources, and education for families and professional care providers when there's a loss of a baby, infertility, or adoption challenges. Candy is the executive director, and she also serves in ministry alongside her husband at their church plant in Hawaii, along with their 2 daughters. You can find out more at 5lovelanguages.com.
Well, Candy, welcome to Building Relationships.
Oh, thank you so much. It's such a joy to be with you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Well, I know that the way God has used you in this field of helping couples who have gone through the death of a child, I know this has been a dream of yours for many years to write a book. How are you feeling now that the book has been written and is out there and available for people?
You know, it's rather surreal when you work on something for so long and you prepare for something to bring it forth, and it's a relief and a joy to have it here. I think almost feels like a little baby, and the fact that there's so many unknowns and excitements, and it's really just wonderful to finally have it here. And the feedback has been really encouraging and wonderful to hear people so excited about having this resource available.
Yeah. Well, let's take a few minutes and hear the story of Grace, your daughter. She's really why we're here today. Mm-hmm. How far along were you in your pregnancy when she was born?
I was a day shy of 33 weeks gestation, which is 8.5 months long.
So talk a little bit about the process that you went through, you and your husband, in those early stages.
Grace was our first baby, the first grandchild on my side, second on my husband's, and this was a baby well anticipated, and we were very excited, and we had a very difficult pregnancy, though. It was not easy. We had something called hyperemesis. I was very sick during the pregnancy, I had a lot of doctor visits and hospital visits, and I ended up going in 7 times in the last 2 weeks before she was born, and I kept saying, the baby's not moving very much, something doesn't seem right. And they patted me on the shoulder and said, you're fine, you're being a worried first-time mom, and we need to just keep moving forward. It's not the baby's time yet. We didn't know at the time if it was a boy or girl. Even though we'd had the ultrasound, we chose not to find out. And so we just trusted that their opinion was right and we were fine. But each day as we had no movement, the worry and concern continued. So I would keep going in until on the 7th visit, and they said, it is dead. And they called the baby an it, which was really hard. I said, it's a baby, it's not an it. And I said, I don't understand how that could be. And unfortunately, the baby was going to have to be delivered stillborn. And it was shocking. It was terrifying. It was, you know, something that feels nightmarish. And we had to go to the hospital, and we were induced, and then began the long 24-hour process of labor. Welcomed Grace, perfect and healthy, other than an umbilical cord issue that was the cause of death. And she was born on December 20th, 2001.
Well, I'm sure that a lot of our listeners can identify with what you've just described because they walked a similar road. And this book, of course, is written to them, whether it was 3 years ago, 1 month ago, or 20 years ago, mm-hmm. because when we have a child, we have a child, and it's a part of who we are, and it's always a part of who we are. Now, you and your husband, did you all respond differently initially in terms of processing your grief?
Well, interesting. I felt we were so united in so many aspects. My husband is very tenderhearted, and he was emotive with me initially. We cried together. He tried to be as present as he could be with me. But his need and desire for normalcy to return and to have some control over something in life, because, of course, he couldn't control this outcome or protect me or our daughter from this situation, he tried to garner that through working hard for us, being a good provider, taking care of me in our home. And I, in the meantime, was emotional and wanting to communicate verbally about all my feelings and what I was thinking. And I actually had insomnia, which is very common for grieving parents. And I could not sleep no matter what I tried. And his go-to was sleep. I would stare at him as he was resting peacefully and wonder, how on earth can he sleep through this? And he just needed to shut down emotionally and let his body rest. And so we began together very closely and began to separate in our way of dealing with the grief. And so over time, we grieved more and more differently.
I want us to talk about that more fully later in the program. But looking back on those early days, is there anything you would have done differently now than what you actually did then?
You know, I have spent a lot of time trying to help people early on so they don't have the regrets and the hurts that I had to live through because I didn't know or have a coach or have a counselor there with me, somebody to guide me and hold my hand through the process. We were very isolated in this and had to go much of it alone without a lot of help initially. And so we have lots of regrets looking back. There's things that we would have liked to do differently. We didn't have someone guiding us through how to do grief, and from the very time of meeting our daughter all the way into the years after, there was a lot of things we could have done better or differently. And that's one of the reasons this is such a passion of ours, is because if we can reach people early on, we can help them to not have the difficulties in their grief journey that we had to go through, and they can go through it without regret and remorse. So, for example, I did not spend enough time with the baby. She was you know, stillborn, and it was a foreign thing to me, and I was scared, and we hardly have any pictures. We have no live video. We were rushed along in the hospital to quickly turn her over for them to take her away, which would be just to the morgue, and then on to the funeral home. But now we know that that's actually not the best way to do things. And so you spend more time with your baby, you get more pictures and video, you have time to say your goodbyes, to pray with them, to have family and friends meet them, to have more healing memories created throughout that little precious window of time that you have. And we would have certainly loved to have been tuned into the five love languages much earlier on in our journey, because once we did know about it, it was extremely helpful and really changed the trajectory for us in our marriage and for the better, of course. And so, yes, there's a lot of things I would love to share with people through this book that will be helpful early on in the grief journey.
Candy, before the break, you mentioned the love languages, and I wish you had known that earlier in your journey. But in the process of that, you did discover it. How did that help you and your husband meet each other's need for love when you discovered the love languages?
Well, I think it's pretty comical when we all figure out how we love the person the way we want to be loved and not the way they need and desire to be loved. And therein is a breakdown in communication and a sense of feeling treasured and understood. And, you know, my love languages, of course, as very common in a relationship, are the opposites or different than the others. And so mine is acts of service would be my top one. And my second runner-up would be quality time. And my husband's, his first is words of affirmation, and his follow-up would be physical touch. And of course, we just kept having hit or miss with all of our communication. You know, I would serve him and I would give him my time and be present, and he would try to just affirm me, and I was a good mom, and he, you know, he would say all these wonderful things, and he, you know, would hold my hand and massage my back and be there for me. And both of our love was very intentional, and we meant what we were doing, and we were doing it with integrity, and we were really trying to bless the other, but it was not filling them up and it was not meeting the other's need. And so there just started to be some resentments and frustrations and not feeling understood. And so once we were tuned into the love languages and read the book and we took the quizzes and began to have a new revelation about how we should go about our relationship, loving each other in light of the five love languages, it just radically shifted everything. Mm-hmm. We just began to change the way we went about the day with each other. And he just became this ultimate acts of service king. Like, I was like, wow. I mean, he just went all over the place to just make me so cared for and loved. And I just was like, wow, this, how can that just change overnight? But it can. You yeah. literally can shift a relationship overnight with a new mindset. And here in our grief, as we're so wounded and we're hurting so badly, you need as much buffer and as much love in the mix of all of that as possible. And so yeah. we were able to do that for each other. And I just realized he needed much more affirmation verbally, how proud I was of him and what a good father he is and all the things I noticed that he was doing for us, and just reaching out and touching him more often, you know, just even walking past him in the kitchen and giving him a hug from behind. He said, oh my gosh, I feel so loved. Just thank you so much for that hug. And, you know, and then what would happen in turn is it would open up the emotional tank inside of him to pour out his feelings and emotions for our daughter, Grace, which made me feel even that much more connected to him, because he felt this freedom and security in my love to be able to express his grief with me.
It's amazing how the love language can change the whole emotional climate in a relationship.
Amen.
And when you're grieving, man, you need to feel loved by your spouse rather than ostracized by each other. Well, Candy, I know that we wrote this book not only for grieving parents, certainly wrote it for them, but we also wrote it to help those around them, like the family, extended family and friends. People can sometimes, in their efforts to help, can sometimes say insensitive things during this time. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, words are powerful, and they have the ability to have life within them or death within them. They can heal or they can hurt. People can never fully understand, I think. We don't even fully grasp sometimes how much of a ripple effect our words will have. People that I meet with who share their grief story will go back 20, 30 years to that one thing that that nurse said that encouraged them and helped them and made them feel like they could get through this okay, versus the person who said something hurtful and painful and they have never let that go. That one comment, that one word has stuck with them all these years. I'll never forget, they say, the moment they said, dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
You can fill in the blank as for what it is for you. You know, if it was told to you by a parent or a teacher or your spouse, but words are powerful. And so we know there's some things that traditionally are just not good to say. And we've included a list in the book of things we should just steer clear from. And one of the things that's real common is people will say, well, it's all for good. You know, it was God's will. But what if that person doesn't really feel that? And what if that's not truly the case? What if it wasn't meant for good? And and what if that person doesn't even believe in God? That's not helpful at that time. He or she is in a better place, as if this place is a terrible place and that's preferred. And so it's just better if they're dead. And that's how parents will say it to me. They'll say, so it's better. It's just, we should all be gone because this is such a horrible place. No, this is a wonderful place. And we're thankful to welcome our children here. Another one is, well, at least you have other children. Yeah. Well, which of your children would you say is insignificant and not as important and it'd be okay if they're gone? Because once you know of them and you want them, they're there. They're part of your family. Another one is, well, at least you weren't that far along. And the moment they found out they were pregnant with the baby, they began to love them and they wished they had been able to get further along.
Yeah.
Another one is, well, if it's not perfect, you don't want it. And I can tell you for certain that parents who have a Down's child or a baby that has an anomaly or a cleft lip palate, there's no difference in their love for that child. And many parents would say, I would have taken them with any limitation or issue that we would have had to deal with. I would have been, you know, so grateful to still have them. And so perfection is in the eye of the beholder. And that's not a helpful comment. Another one is, you know, well, it all happens for a reason. And it's such a platitude that frustrates and irritates the grieving parent. You know, they're just, yeah, well, that's not helpful. Offer me something that's life-giving. And so that's what we want to encourage in this book, too, is let your words be full of life, seasoned with love, and be honoring and be thoughtful and mindful. So many things we say them because we're uncomfortable in the silence. We say them because we just don't know what to say, so we just quickly blurt something out without thinking it through. And if you could imagine yourself being told those words in the midst of something painful and traumatic, would it feel comforting? Would it feel loving? And if you can't say yes to that, then don't say it. Sometimes silence is far better. And we have a whole list of wonderful, beautiful things you should say and can say that will help a family member. I'll give you just a couple. I don't know what to say, but I am so sad. We are thinking of you and we are praying. However you need us, we're here for you. We love you guys. And we miss them too. This is not taken lightly. It truly affects us. Please know we're all deeply saddened by your incredible loss. This world will not be the same without them here. And we all missed out. It's not okay. So there's a lot of beautiful things you can say. And I will say too, sometimes my words, they're not a lot of words. There's very few select words, and I often just am with someone. I hold space with them. You just take time to listen to them. Let them share. Let them talk. To be honest, I often just cry with people. You know, Jesus wept, and I just feel like one of the blessings we can give is that our tears mean something. They matter. And if they come, don't be embarrassed about that. Don't feel bad that you're weeping with them. I think that's a beautiful thing. And people know that there's integrity behind your words then. And you don't want to muster it up and try to cry. But if it comes, let it flow and weep with your friend, weep with your loved one. Those are beautiful, powerful words that come through the tear.
You know, one of the points we make in the first of the book is that you don't necessarily have to read this book from beginning to end. You might want to go to the chapter that applies to you. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting here thinking, you know, if our listeners are hearing this and they know someone who's lost a baby, maybe the first chapter they want to read is this on helpful words and hurtful words, you know, helpful actions and hurtful actions, because they want to be a help. I mean, let's face it. Most of us, if our friend goes through this, we want to be a help. It's just that we don't always know how to help and what to say. And I think this chapter is just some great ideas on how to verbalize your concern and how not to verbalize your thoughts.
So. Definitely. Yeah, I do think that you can go to the chapter and just at that point that you're having questions, at that point that you're wondering, how do we navigate this? There is a chapter in there for you that will help you know how to talk to your loved one, how to be supportive of them, how to understand what's going through their mind, what they're thinking. Because one of the common things people say is, I just can't imagine. Well, take a little bit of time to try. You know, it is an empathetic, thoughtful process to sit there and say, I'm going to try to imagine just a little bit, to dive into that deep pool with them and try to think about what does it feel like to be in their shoes, to live out all these different new situations in light of their loss. What do holidays look like? What do special dates look like? We have to really think about, what's it going to be like for them when they come up on their baby's one-year anniversary? What is it going to be like on their baby's 18-year anniversary? You know, for us, the calendar as a bereaved parent is a stark reminder of all the days that they haven't been here with us. And so while your other children, if you have them, or your friends' children are going on and reaching milestones, your child's not here to join in that glorious process. You know, I was already thinking when I bought flowers for Grace's funeral, I left sobbing because it hit me. I would not be buying flowers for her wedding. I would not be buying flowers for all the times leading up to that with graduations and special ceremonies. It just dawned on me, and I love flowers. I had a huge, glorious array of flowers at my wedding. And I just, as I laid the flowers at her grave, it just hit me so, so strongly. This is forever. This is not temporal. This is like my life story now. This is, I'm living out this situation, and she really doesn't get to be in my present, my future, and I'm missing out on something far greater than I think I'm even able to grasp at this moment. Parents have a really hard time when they hit special dates. And you know, you want them to celebrate with you. You want them to be excited with you when you have your celebrations for your children. And they will do so often, but with grief in their heart. You know, they might not show it to you. They might do it in the bathroom as they weep and come back out with a smile on their face. Get in the car and sob all the way home after leaving your baby shower or your kid's special event, because they want to be there for you. They want to support you. But if you can, in the midst of that, honor their journey and acknowledge, that goes a long way. So if you can think, what is their love language? How do they love to be loved? And how, in my present situation with this friend or loved one, can I do something that honors the life of their baby and their story? So, for example, you know, I've suggested to people, why don't you have a rose at the event that you go and give to them, and or you acknowledge this here today on this table. We have this beautiful gift for all of you, or this angel figurine, or this candle lit to remember our loved one who their baby's not here today with us in this celebration. Mm-hmm. And bereaved parents will say to me, that acknowledgement was so meaningful, and it just meant the world to us, because they're sitting there thinking with a big, you know, knot in their chest and a lump in their throat, you know, I wish our child was part of this, and they were here in the story with us. And they're being missed by us, but we don't know if anyone else realizes that or even remembers.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of beautiful things we can do to acknowledge and to support and to love them through. And all of that keeps us connected. It keeps us in a place of good relationship, and we are able to stay in a place where we feel safe with those people, and we are able to keep that relationship strong. And so you don't have to lose a friend over grief. Grief can actually make your friendships and your loving relationships that much stronger, because those who support someone in grief, those friendships go deep. Like people will say, that person was there for me, and they said the most loving things, and I would do anything for that friend. I know that they are someone I can always count upon.
You know, Candy, when you were talking earlier in the last segment about friends helping out and family members helping out, I remember a mother who said to me some time ago, she said, I lost my baby, and it was about 7 months afterwards, I went to a baby shower for a friend of mine who was having a baby. And she said, I kept my composure while I was there, held it together. But all the while I was thinking about, my baby. And she said the next day, the person who put on that shower called me on the phone and said, I want to thank you for being there at the shower. I know that had to be hard for you. And she gave me a chance to kind of pour out my heart and share with her, yes, I did struggle. The fact that she remembered and she was thinking about how I might be feeling meant so much to me. Mm. So it's those kind of ideas that we're trying to foster in the book to help people.
Yeah.
Let me just shift gears a bit. We talk in the book about also taking a break from the grieving process. What might that look like?
Well, I believe it's possible to take a break, and I think that men are actually better at this than women are. They seem to be able to compartmentalize it better than we can. I feel like for women, it's always at the forefront so strongly, and it's really hard to have our mind be at rest in the midst of grief, because we perseverate on these thoughts over and over, and we don't get even a mental break. And I think men can say, I'm at work now, I'm in work mode, and they literally have that in a different compartment of their mind right then. It's not at the forefront. They're getting through their job, and they're not even thinking about it. And then it'll hit them really strong, maybe in the car on the way home or as soon as they walk in the door. But having a mental break and having that time to rest in your grief is very important, actually. And that's why taking time to, for example, watch a movie and it's lighthearted and happy, and you just give yourself permission, because it feels like an abandonment, actually, if you stop thinking about them. As a female, as a mom, I feel like so many of us moms, when we talk about this, it feels almost cruel to just not be thinking about them. It feels dishonoring, because what mother would forget about their child? You're always thinking about them. The next time you get to nurse them, checking on their diaper, making sure they're safe as they're sleeping, just doting on them and just cuddling them, everything. Your day is about your baby. And so then when all of a sudden you stop thinking for them a little bit, you feel like, oh my gosh, how could I have not thought about them? You feel this guilt. But we need a mental break, because grief is so intense. It's hard work to grieve. And so getting away, even just to give permission, we're going to take a little vacation, a little hiatus. We're going to go somewhere pleasant and beautiful and pleasing to our senses, and just have a little time away together or alone if you need solitude. And then as far as at home, it's literally while I do this activity, while I journal, or while I am listening to this music or watching this video or having this friend over, I'm going to put it on the shelf for a minute. I'm going to give myself a little window of time and have permission. And you have to literally be given permission. I have to tell parents, it's okay to take a break. Mm-hmm. You can have a few hours or a day and give yourself a mental break and just not be in that state of fight or flight and constant fear and anxiety and worry and stress, and give yourself that time. So it's it's necessary. It's good. It's beneficial, and it's okay to do.
Yeah, and I think understanding that and then doing it, because we do, and we can only take so much of the intensity of the grief, and taking those brief little times can be extremely helpful. Mm-hmm. We also talk in the book about rating grief, which we often do, and that is in the book we refer to that as the grief-o-meter. For example, we often would think, well, a child who dies at the age of 10, that's much worse than losing a baby at birth or a miscarriage. Why is it so dangerous for us to think along those lines?
Well, we minimize the other person's ability and their power to grieve. We say your grief is insignificant. It's not important. And by not validating their grief, they no longer feel safe to process, especially not with the person who's verbalizing that. But now they have a guilt complex for actually grieving, and they need to grieve. So it creates an inner conflict emotionally and mentally. And so we see this happen. This phenomenon is very common in a support group meeting. And just to give one example, like I have given in the book, we say that you're in a group, we say this is a safe place to grieve. But if you don't really define that, there's a slippery slope that we go down. And an example would be a mother who says, I just had a miscarriage. My baby was only 8 weeks along, and I wasn't that far along. And the person who had the stillbirth and the SIDS loss in the group, of course, their loss was further along. And the person says, I can't imagine what you guys have gone through. It would have been so horrible to have had a stillbirth or to lose my baby to SIDS. And therein, they're even taking away their own right to grieve. They're saying, I guess I shouldn't even be here. Like, my thing is so silly. But and now they feel really bad about it. Or the person who says, look, you know, you guys just had a miscarriage or an ectopic pregnancy, or you only had a stillbirth. My baby was 4 when they died. Mm-hmm. Now that person is silenced in that moment, and they know where that person stands, and they feel like, well, I can't safely grieve with you. I can't share my heart with you and my emotions because I am grieving. How can I deny that? I did want this baby. We were hopeful for this child. You know, you don't know that person's journey or story, but we meet people all the time. They say, look, I did all of this to get pregnant. I mean, I went through infertility treatments. I went through doctors and so many countless appointments, and we finally got to the point we were pregnant, and then that baby was lost early on. And that's a very painful journey. Mm. So we can't ever look at somebody and say, this is how long you get to grieve. But we do. And so we need to stop it. It needs to change. This is something culturally that we can see in all different kinds of cultures. This is carried out because it's a learned behavior. It's a way of doing grief, and it's not a healthy way of doing grief. And so what happens is, everybody knows, well, I better not tell people about my early loss because I know no one's going to validate it. No one's going to acknowledge it. And so they suffer totally alone and isolated. Yeah. And that will always add on and add on to other things that are hurtful and painful in life. And so at the base of their pain and hurt is this grief that's not acknowledged. And so we need to be very careful to not look at someone and say, well, you know, your loss was this far along, and you know, you really had a tragic circumstance. So for you, I'll allow you a year to grieve. But after a year, you better snap out of it and move on. But that's the mentality that is given to so many of us bereaved parents. We are literally feeling and knowing these people around us are thinking they have a date stamp on our grief. There is literally a time limit. And then there's no more toleration and no more willingness to listen to, support, or journey with that person anymore because they know they've passed the limit. You've grieved too long, you're still hurting, and I won't tolerate it. Mm-hmm. And so obviously that's really hurtful. We can't do that to people.
Often also, we touched on this earlier just a bit, the difference between husbands and wives grieving, and you mentioned the compartmentalization that husbands often do, which can be helpful as a part of the process. But often I've seen that husbands will say to their wives things like you just said, you know, now it's been a year, you need to snap out of this, you need to get back with it, you know. What do the husbands need to hear?
Well, the desire of most people that I know who have said hurtful things to me is it's come out of a lack of knowledge. They didn't understand what to say, how to say it, and why they're saying what they say to me, because it's a learned behavior, a learned way of speaking about this topic. And we need to understand a lot of times that they're actually trying to say it because they care about us. So, for example, if a year after your baby dies, you're still in your pajamas every day, you haven't returned to work, you don't take care of yourself, your home, your other kids, and you're really depressed and you are not functional, that's not healthy either. And the people around you want to see you thrive and want to see you part of the land of the living and still enjoying life at least and being able to partake. And so if you're in a really bad place and the people close to you are seeing that, it's concerning and alarming. They don't know what to do because they're terrified by the fact that you seem to be very stuck. And so there's this fine line you have to walk between what is really just not healthy, and we want to help someone to be healthier. As a husband, if he really knows my wife is in a bad place, then the comment that he's made, if he says, you just need to move on, obviously is not going to have the effect he hopes it will. That will just isolate her even more and make her feel shame and embarrassment and feel disconnection. Versus if he says, I'm worried about you, I love you, and I want to live this life with you. I want to grieve and move forward with you in our grief. And I feel like you're really stuck and I'm scared because I don't know, is this a really dark road of depression, and do we need to get help? Do we need to, you know, talk to a counselor? Do we need to get you on some supplements or a medication or something, because now it's really gotten bad? There's a difference between really bad, and we can talk about what some of those things are, versus just somebody who's still sad. You know, you can be sad for years and years and years and years, and it's okay. And you shouldn't take that away from somebody. And you know, if they're functional and they're doing life and they're still in the game, so to speak, you shouldn't minimize their grief and tell them that they can't have it. And so everyone has a right to their grief, and as long as it's not hurting themselves or others, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I want to talk about a couple of other things. One is the whole issue of layers of loss and grieving through these different layers of loss. Say just a word about that.
If we have had other kinds of trauma or hurt in our life, it's just understood that those things will layer upon layer. So, for example, if as a child you lost someone close to you, a relative, a very close friend, and maybe you never really dealt with that, didn't even know how to process that. And then now as a teenager, then you lost a good friend or a teacher, someone close to you again. Depending on how you process that, now those two things have layered on top of each other, and that might be an unresolved grief in your life. It might be something that you've never really learned how to cope with and how to process. Now as an adult, you lose a baby, you lose a child, you're mentally going to touch back upon all of those other experiences and how you felt at that time in your life. As a child, did you feel supported? Did you feel safe or secure? Did it take away your sense of security in your life? Did you feel validated? Did you feel like, you know, you knew how to navigate this? Or were people there for you in that? And as you go through and touch upon each of the previous losses in your life, that's going to assimilate into your current experience. And a lot of people will wonder why they are grieving. They'll say, why can't I work through this? It seems like I am really stuck, or I feel like I'm going backwards. And sometimes we have to go back and look and say, well, what have been your other traumatic experiences in life and the other grief that you've experienced? Because it's all going to layer on top of the next layer. And we have to sometimes go back to the original and the last and the previous ones to figure out why we got stuck and we can move forward healing each of those past wounds. And so you can also look at it as an opportunity. You open this back up and you say, let's actually officially deal with that and address it. And it will really help you move forward in your grief in this present situation.
Yeah, and I'm sure that many of our listeners have experienced that, because death is a reality in life, and mm-hmm. most of us have experienced more than one death in our family. So, mm-hmm. yeah, it's a good observation. I wanted to touch on one other topic at least, and that is, if you have other children when you lose a baby, how do you help those children process their own grief, because they were looking forward to having a new brother or a new sister?
This is really, really hard for a bereaved parent, because the whole family is excited for this baby, and these children often are drawing and talking and speaking about this new member of their family while mommy is pregnant and kissing mom's belly, and there's all kinds of celebrations being planned and all kinds of thoughts about what life changes and how it looks. Now there's a minivan. Now they're decorating the room to share the room. There's all kinds of things building in this family in the excitement. And then once that baby is here, if the baby dies as a child or they die as a baby, all of that, of course, changes everything for that child. And so there's this instant vulnerability felt by them, confusion, terror. Often the children who lose a sibling, they struggle terribly. They can have night terrors. They can start bedwetting again. They can become very physically violent and angry because this emotion that's pent up that they don't understand. They don't know how to have a good outlet for it. They can become super goofy and crazy as a way to just try to divert the attention off of the real deep emotion they're experiencing. They can become disruptive at school. And parents are often just, they're hurting so badly. To now take care of the wounds and the hurts of their child is difficult. And then the questions come, well, when will we have another? And why did they have to die? And why did this happen? Am I going to die too? Are you going to die? And all of a sudden, this protective bubble they felt has been burst, and they are in a new reality. And so it's very important to know how to give them the love that they need. So taking the profile for your children and having them understand their love languages and you understanding their love languages is a very important piece to the family healing together. Families who grieve together well will stay together well and stay strong. And this can be very bonding, and it can be beautiful. You can actually have such an incredible, deep, rich experience together as you love each other well through the grief journey. So you have to go the extra mile with your kids to make them feel safe and to make them feel secure and to make them feel the love that you need as well. So you're going to take extra energy and time into loving them with their love language. And sometimes that looks really different with kids. Like a joke that I tell parents is, you got to use humor. So let's say the kid's acting out and being difficult. Prior to the loss, you might have really disciplined harshly for their behavior. And now you're going to look at it very differently. And you're going to say, all right, you don't want to come to dinner and join us for the family meal? Well, go to your room, and you come to their room with a big picnic basket and a blanket, and you say, well, we're going to join you for dinner tonight in your bedroom. And they say, what? You know, and you say, well, you know, we didn't want you to eat alone tonight. And they're just shocked, like, what? And you know, they thought they were being isolated and going to be alone, but you're like, no, you wanted to be in your room, you said, and you didn't want to join us, so we just decided we'll join you. So you have to handle things differently, and you have to discipline differently in the grief journey, because some of the behaviors, you have to be at the root of, why did they act like that? It's not really them just being difficult and rude. It's actually a hurt, and they need to be understood, and they need to feel heard.
You know, one of the things I really appreciate is that in the book also, we won't have time to talk about it today, but is how God led you to take your grief and what you had gone through to reach out and help so many other people through your nonprofit, Missing Grace. And I'm hoping that there's going to be a lot of parents are going to say, you know, I can turn something positive into this. It doesn't bring back my child, but it does allow me a way of honoring them by helping other people. So thanks for being with us today, and thanks for all of your work on this book. I really do believe it's going to help not only parents who've lost a child, but it's going to help pastors, it's going to help counselors, it's going to help anyone who is ministering to other people through the grief of losing a child. So thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Chapman. It's been an honor to write this with you, and we're just grateful for the chance to share it with the world now.
What an hour of hope we've had today, and grace as well. You've heard the heart of Candy McVicker on the program. And if you go to the website, 5lovelanguages.com, you'll see our featured resource titled Holding On to Love After You've Lost a Baby, the 5 Love Languages for Grieving Parents. Just go to 5lovelanguages.com.
And next week, your questions and comments on our April Dear Gary broadcast.
And if you'd like to ask a question, call our listener line at 1-866-424-GARY. That's 1-866-424-GARY. A big thank you today to our production team, Steve Wick and Janice Todd. Building Relationships with Dr. Gary Chapman is a production of Moody Radio in Chicago in association with Moody Publishers, a ministry of Moody Bible Institute. Thanks for listening.